those. And so our first presentation is by Jim Calvin. Jim is a managing principal with McDowell Group, an Alaska-based research firm specializing in social economic impact studies, economic analyses, cost-benefit studies, market research, and feasibility studies. McDowell Group has offices in Juneau and Anchorage and has been in business for 40 years. Jim has been with the firm for 25 years. He is a lifelong Alaskan, born in Ketchikan and raised in Juneau. His formal education includes a Master of Science in Mineral Economics from the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He earned his undergraduate degree from Western Washington University. Let's welcome Jim Calvin.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks, everyone, for your interest in our socioeconomic baseline work. Let me confess right up front that I'm pinch hitting for our project manager, Donna Logan, so if I should stumble during the course of our PowerPoint, please forgive me. Let's see, as soon as we get this to advance. There we go. We have about 300 pages of socioeconomic data, historical data, some of it back to 1990. So all I really hope to accomplish today is to give you a sense of the data, a flavor of the data, talk a little bit about the sources of information that we rely on and what some of our challenges are with the quality of the data that we have to work with. Got some information to share with you, some statistics to share with you, but otherwise just want to give you a kind of a very broad overview of what we're trying to accomplish with this socioeconomic baseline. Four primary components to the baseline work. One is the demographic data, that's population and gender and age and racial characteristics and that sort of thing. Community infrastructure is also part of the baseline. That's the public utilities, public safety, healthcare, education. Of course, the economy itself is important, the cash economy. We don't venture into the subsistence side of the equation. That's left in the very capable hands of Steve Ron and his crew. So we talk more about the cash economy, what creates jobs and cash income for the residents of the study area. And we also have some health and social well-being kinds of indicators that are part of the baseline as well. As soon as I figure out how to make this work, there we go. So first, let's talk about the study area. What's interesting about this work is that the range of our baseline work includes very, very small, generally cash-poor communities all the way up to the largest economy in Alaska, Anchorage. Of course, most of our detailed focus is on the eight small communities in the immediate project area, but we also are interested in the broader Southwest Alaska area, Bristol Bay, Dillingham, et cetera. And we're also interested in Kenai Peninsula Borough, Mat-Su, Municipality of Anchorage, all of which would play some role in providing labor, goods, services, et cetera, to a mine should it be developed. So a very, very broad picture from a baseline perspective. What's ironic is that we have the best data in the largest communities where we're least concerned about impacts, and the poorest data in the smallest communities where we're the most concerned about what changes might come. Let's talk a minute about some of the demographic data. Again, population data is presented up through 2009. We don't have in the baseline document 2010 census data. There's actually 2011 data available from the state. We'll talk more about that. We're quite concerned about the quality of some of the data, the census data that we have to work with these days. But in general, we have data on various data on population characteristics such as age, gender, race, migration patterns, and so forth, household and family characteristics. Again, what's in the baseline is all census data, 1990 and 2000. Baseline document does not yet have 2010 information in it. Of course, key source of data is the U.S. Census Bureau. Really, it traditionally has been really the only complete and thorough data that we have to work with when we try and understand the cash economy side of very small communities in Alaska. but then you always struggle with the date of the data. Once you get 4, 5, 6, 7 years out from a census period, it loses its utility pretty quickly. And of course, census data doesn't present a full picture. There are certain seasonality issues that are important in rural Alaska that's not captured in the census data. I think that sort of a common theme with respect to all of our data sets is that none of them does a really particularly good job of painting the economic or socioeconomic picture, but by piecing them all together, we hope that we can get a reasonably good picture. You know, some of the other data sources that we use to piece together this picture include the really good fish and game subsistence survey done several years back that includes some questions about sources of cash income, sources of employment. We rely a great deal in all of our work on Department of Labor employment and payroll data. It gives the most current snapshot of employment. There are other sources of employment, the Federal Bureau of Economic Analysis and such, but generally very dated. The problem with Department of Labor's data is that it's not available really in any detail for very small communities, so we struggle with that data as well a bit. As I said, I'd show you a few numbers here, and this is population trends in our 8 communities nearest the project site. Kind of a mixed bag here. Again, this is through 2009. As I indicated earlier, we have some concerns about what we're seeing in the 2010 census data. You know, we have 2009, 2010, 2011 data. 2010 is a different methodology than the census data. So we have to be careful when we see changes of even 10 or 15% in some of these small communities. It could be methodological rather than a real change. You know, for example, in non-Dalton, which has been trending down pretty steadily over the last 10 years in terms of its population, the 2010 data shows a pretty significant, substantial drop of more than 10%. Meanwhile, we see a pretty substantial hike in population at New Halen and Port Allsworth, but we really don't know because of methodological issues whether that marks real trends or not. So we're in the process of trying to better understand that data as we think about updating the baseline. Broaden the picture a little bit here and talk about population in the general census area, at the census area level and borough level. This is the Lake Clark, Iliamna Lake area communities, the hard-to-see blue line across the top. Generally, over the last 10 years, all combined, relatively stable population picture. Again, some communities up, some communities down. The balance of the Lake and Peninsula borough generally trending down in its population over that same period. Stepping back even further and looking at the Anchorage and sort of south central area in general, Anchorage's employment or population climbing relatively steadily over the last 10, 20 years, frankly. Some work we're doing for the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation suggests that Anchorage is likely to top the 300,000 mark this year for the first time. Matsu Borough, one of the fastest growing areas in the state over the last decade, continues to grow fairly significantly, and Kenai Peninsula Borough has been relatively flat over that time period. Some more demographic data that's again kind of illustrates the diversity of the environment that we're working in here. This is racial characteristics percentage of the population that's American Indian, Alaska Native. 4 out of the 5 primary area communities are 90% or more Alaska Native. 7 out of 8 are majority Alaska Native. Stepping back, a little broader picture here, Lake and Peninsula overall is 80% Alaska Native. Bristol Bay Borough is 45%, and the Dillingham census area is 76% Alaska Native. And our more metropolitan, more urbanized areas are all generally, you know, 1 in 10 residents is an Alaska Native. In terms of the economy, the scope of our assessment of the cash economy includes a lot of data on employment and unemployment. The commercial fishing sector is a data-rich area, so we've got a lot of data in the baseline about harvests and harvest values and participation, and we'll talk a little bit about that momentarily. Capital improvement projects are an important part of the economic baseline because they are often a pretty important source of cash income. These temporary seasonal construction projects in rural Alaska can be quite important sources of cash income for people, so it's important that we have an understand understanding of what role that kind of economic activity has played in some of these smaller communities. Census gives us some workforce attributes, the education levels and so forth of the population. We have per capita and household income data, you know, 1990 and 2000 census, and we have some new data for 2010, which I'll describe momentarily. And we've gathered some public assistance data from the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. This is median household income for the smaller communities as well as the borough overall and statewide. This graph is intended to tell us a couple things. One is a big, very broad diversity in terms of median household income in the communities. Also want to note here that as an example of our concerns about the latest census data, it shows that Iliamna, which here is a little bit over $60,000 a year in terms of median household income, the census data, which is based on American Community Survey, which is an average over the last 3 or 4 years, not the traditional census data, shows that the median in Iliamna in 2010, or their estimate in 2010, is just over $100,000 a year. But the margin of error, as reported by the Census Bureau, is plus or minus $50,000. So we see that throughout this, and that obviously causes us great concern as we think about trying to draw some conclusions about how things have changed over the last 10 years. And again, this historically, traditionally, it's the census. Census is the only source of this kind of income data that we've had. And we're kind of losing a little bit of faith that we're going to be able to draw very good conclusions from what's now being and will be published going forward from the Census Bureau. Per capita income, kind of the same picture, and we have the same kind of issues with respect to very, very high error margins, plus or minus 25%, plus or minus 40% with some of these. These are the 2000 numbers here, but again, as we look at 2010, we kind of have to shake our heads and wonder, well, how much of this is real growth and how much of this is just a change in methodology. It's all sample-based now rather than actual counts, the short form of the census versus long form of the census, kind of a long story. But suffice to say, we've got some concerns about how we're going to update the baseline with the latest census data. This is another interesting indicator of the labor force characteristics and demographic characteristics. This is the percentage of the population over 16 years of age that's not in the labor force. The absolute numbers might not mean much. On the far right-hand side of the graph is the statewide average. Statewide, 35% of the adults, 35% of the population over the age of 16 is not in the labor force. That includes retirees and other folks that aren't looking for work, as well as people that are unemployed, actively looking for work, or unemployed and have given up looking for work. What's notable here, though, is that a pretty dramatic difference in some of the smaller communities with some over 60% not in the labor force. Very typical of small rural Alaska, nothing unique with these communities in that respect. We'd see this if we were to pick any half a dozen very small remote rural communities in Alaska. Some of the data we get from the Department of Labor can tell us a little bit about the number of employers in these communities. Again, Department of Labor is just a part of the picture. They don't report employment for sole proprietors, for those that are self-employed. Of course, they don't capture commercial fishing-related employment. They do capture seafood processing, but not commercial fishing. So we can use this as an indicator of the size of the economy, the number of businesses that are actually reporting employment to the Department of Labor. Again, just another one of the many pieces of the puzzle that we use to try and pull together this picture of the socioeconomic environment. The baseline includes fairly detailed discussions of basic industry conditions. We consider a basic industry any industry that draws money back into a region. Some good or service is sold to an outside market, whether it's a sport fishing experience or a commercial fishing, or it's salmon sold to an outside market, draws new money back into the economy. That's a basic industry. So we have fairly lengthy discussions about conditions in these. Important basic industries. In the region, of course, it's commercial fishing, seafood processing, and the visitor industry and the private sector are key drivers. And of course, government really is the largest source of year-round jobs in all of rural Alaska. As I said, we're data rich in the commercial fishing side of the economy. This is sort of a complicated little graph here, but the upshot is that it shows a dramatic drop in Bristol Bay salmon harvest volumes and values from about 1995 until bottoming out in about 2002, and then increasing pretty steadily since then, as a couple, a lot of things going on in the seafood market and the salmon market. But Alaska has done very well positioning itself against farm salmon, and the farm salmon industry has taken a big hit here in the last few years, but it's on the rebound. So it'll be interesting to see if this trend persists with higher harvests and higher values in particular. A lot of information mashed onto this one slide. I guess the key point I want to make here is that big non-resident participation in Bristol Bay commercial fishing on the drift net side of the fishery, less than half of the permits fished are owned by Alaska residents. 46% of the permits fished in 2009 were owned by Alaska residents, so the majority are owned by non-residents. Greater resident participation on the set net side, with about 67% of the total permits fished held by Alaska residents. Again, this is just 2009. And this graph shows the relative changes in participation in commercial fishing, not resident and non-resident. The blue line shows the number of permits fished. This is a combination of set net and drift net. Shows a pretty sharp decline in resident participation during that period, when the harvest and values were dropping sharply from 1995 down to 2002. Really the loss of 600, a decline of about 600 or 700 fewer permits fished held by Alaska residents. The non-resident activity also declined through that period. Both have rebounded a bit. The non-resident share of the permits has rebounded to kind of historical levels, but the Alaska resident share remains well below. So a lot of permits out there held by Alaskans that aren't fished at the moment. The purpose of this information is just to illustrate what roles more immediate residents to the project site play in these fisheries. For example, Bristol Bay residents own 7% of the set net permits that were fished in 2009, and they own 6% of the drift net permits fished. Similarly, Dillingham Census Area residents had accounted for 12% of the set net permits fished, 24% of the drift net. And Lake and Peninsula boroughs, the lowest level of participation in the Bristol Bay fisheries, with 3% of the permits, of the Bristol Bay permits fished, held by Lake and Penn residents, and 5% of the drift net permits. Seafood processing employment, some local participation in that sector. This is Bristol Bay region-wide. Shows along the bottom, the blue graph is resident number of residents employed in seafood processing in the Bristol Bay region. Pretty flat, between 500 and 600 throughout this 9 or 10 year study period. Meantime, the non-resident participation has sort of trended right parallel with the health of the fishery, with the dropping dramatically from down to the bottom in 2002 and then slowly ratcheting back up. A couple points here. One is that non-residents account for the vast majority of the workers in the seafood processing industry in Bristol Bay. And in fact, statewide, about 75% of all of the workers employed in the seafood processing sector are non-residents. Some of the data sources that we use to piece together this baseline picture of the economy includes whatever documents we have we can get from some of the local agencies and organizations. We conduct a lot of interviews with folks to find out to get the sort of on the ground perspective on the health of the visitor industry and the lodge business and so forth. Rely on whatever secondary data sources we can get, whether it's from the Department of Labor and Workforce Development or Commerce and Economic Development, all of whom keep data related to these communities and these economies, again, none of which paints the whole picture, but together they do, we can piece together a pretty thorough, pretty comprehensive picture. Health and Social Services, Department of Natural Resources, of course, federal government, the Census Bureau of Economic Analysis, and Park Service data, some traffic indicators there. We rely a fair bit on some of our own internal documents. We're the Commerce and Economic Development's visitor industry researcher. We do the Alaska Visitor Statistics Program, which is a very large statewide visitor intercept project. Last year, we interviewed 3,500 visitors and got data from another 3,500 from an online survey that asks all kinds of questions about where in Alaska they go, how much money they spend, what they did, what they liked, what they didn't like, how they planned their trip, and so forth. Anyway, a fair bit of data there that's relevant to Southwest Alaska that we can draw on. Similarly, we're the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute's research contractor, and in that capacity are continually tracking trends in salmon and other seafood markets, and have quite an extensive library there that we can draw on for this kind of work. So I've talked about some of this already, but the research challenges that we have with respect to our data sources, as I said, Department of Labor doesn't include any self-employed people, so guides, for example, or B&B operators that don't necessarily report themselves, don't have employees, and therefore don't report themselves to the Department of Labor, don't show up in the data, and that can be really important in rural Alaska. A lot of times, Department of Labor data doesn't accurately reflect the wage and salary jobs that do exist in a community because it's reported wherever a company headquarters might be. It could be that there might be a lodge in somewhere in Southwest Alaska that's headquartered in Anchorage, and oftentimes we'll see that's where the employment is reported, even though the employment is actually happening out in one of these communities. Similarly, we'll see for school districts, we'll see employment reported at where the district headquarters are, and not where the teachers are actually living. So we've got to pay particular attention to the published data that we do get. And of course, data is for individual employers is confidential. Up until 2007, we could actually get from the Department of Labor a monthly employment for virtually every employer in the state, wherever they were in the state. It was great data set. Unfortunately, the federal government said, "Stop it! Can't do that anymore. You have to treat that as confidential." So we no longer have data for individual employers. And what that means is that, and there are certain restrictions about how you can group employers to get data. Upshot is that for small communities, we often really have virtually no data that we can get from Department of Labor to work with. Change gears a minute, talk about community infrastructure. Our baseline document includes some information on housing units, heating sources, value of the housing, other sorts of characteristics, number of bedrooms and such, information on public utilities such as water, solid waste, communications, information on educational facilities, school enrollment data, number of teachers, healthcare infrastructure in these smaller communities. Again, we focus this kind of baseline work, in the smaller areas. We don't go to much trouble to gather, for example, healthcare infrastructure for Anchorage or even Kenai Peninsula, for example, very, very well developed. There's not much point in spending a lot of time profiling that. The sources of data, again, we do spend a lot of time on the phone making sure that we have a good sense of what actually is going on the ground in terms of infrastructure. State of Alaska has a pretty decent website with a lot of data on community transportation, public utilities, and other sorts of infrastructure, but it needs to be updated, and so we frequently will call and make sure that what's published is up to date, and oftentimes it's not, because things do tend to change fairly rapidly out there depending on what capital project might have happened the previous year or two. So the usual cast of characters in terms of our data sources for the infrastructure. In this instance, we do also rely on the regional housing authorities to help us with some of the housing indicators and regional healthcare providers for some data as well. The health and social environment is a particularly interesting one for us. There is some data, but not nearly enough available. We can get data at the census area or borough level, but things like birth rates and death rates and such just are not available for smaller communities. We can get, again, at the census area level, at the borough level, we can get hospitalization information and data on non-fatality injuries and so forth, but we can't find that. You can't get that for non-Dalton, for example. It just isn't published, and obviously what data that might exist in the hands of regional healthcare providers, for example, is private, highly confidential information. So there's just a bit of a gap in what we'd like to know about the human health environment there. Also some data on crime statistics. Again, the data just isn't available for the very small communities, but we can get it regionally and sometimes at the borough level. Do have better data with respect to education. We've actually done a fair amount of work for the First Alaskans Foundation, compiling very detailed educational data for rural Alaska, so that we're in better shape in that regard, at least in terms of achievement, performance, and so forth. Our data sources, again, a lot of help from state agencies, Health and Social Services, Bureau of Vital Statistics, Department of Public Safety for some of the crime data, and Department of Education for school performance related information. Another sort of snapshot of illustrate some of the data in the baseline. This is school enrollment for each of the, this is for seven communities in the immediate project area. For the same story, some are up, some are down. Quite a lot of variation within these communities. Dropout rates, again, available from the Department of Education. What jumps out at me here is that they're doing something right in the Bristol Bay School District with a relatively low dropout rate of 2.7% relative to 8.6 in Lake and Penn and 7.6 in Dillingham. And the inverse of that is the graduation rates, which again shows Bristol Bay School District doing something right with a much, much higher graduation rate than some of the other school districts in the area. As I've said, we struggle with finding enough data or adequate data that can help us portray the health and social environment, the human well-being baseline in these communities. Again, there probably is data buried in the regional health corporations that help us understand all manner of the health of the folks living in Southwest Alaska and elsewhere, but it's simply just not available. And collecting it is a big research challenge. More and more, human health is an important part of the baseline analysis and an understanding of the potential impacts of resource development. And this is one area where we're still working hard to figure out how to get a better handle on this sort of really highly personal information, especially for communities of 100 residents. It's pretty hard to mask information that might be buried in various databases. And I think that's it. So again, just hope you get a general sense of what we're trying to accomplish with the socioeconomic baseline. It's, like I say, 300 pages of great, gory detailed data. If you have an interest in it and take the time to look through it and have questions, comments, please don't hesitate to contact us at the McDowell Group. We've been studying this sort of thing for 40 years, and we're love to talk with people that actually use the data and might have some advice on how to produce even better data. So by all means, please communicate with us if you have an interest. And with that, I'll be happy to answer some questions.
Hello. I'm from Dalton, and I was wondering, how did you get seven?
Excuse me, can we just get your name real quick?
Harry Karshikov from Dalton.
Okay, thank you.
And I was wondering, how did you get the seven employees in Dalton? Is that a survey?
If I understood the question, how did we get the seven employers? Was that?
Yes.
That's from the Department of Labor. They, again, that's the number of organizations, not it's public and private, but the number of organizations. Each quarter, every employer in the state is required to file forms, paperwork with the Department of Labor concerning employment security taxes. So that's strictly the count of the number of organizations in 2007 that submitted paperwork to the Department of Labor. Again, it's probably not, there's other employers there that may not be reflected in that data, but again, it's a piece of the data that we have to use to the best extent that we can.
Okay. I'll just give a little history of Dalton. We got two firefighting crews that goes all over the state here in Alaska, and we got some fishermen that fish in Bristol Bay. And we got two governments, a city and tribal, and they each got about 7 employees. And there's some people that traps around in Dalton. And another thing, Leeblock's not on Iliamna. It's on the Quijack. And there's a couple of schools that's closing in Conda, the not enough students, I guess. Anyway, Dalton's growing with the jobs too. And there's some mine jobs, not too much.
That's good information. I appreciate hearing that. You make a good point about the firefighting. That's another example of how it's really, really difficult to get a full picture of all of the sources of cash income into these some of these smaller communities. There's, you know, people from all over rural Alaska will go and do firefighting in the summertime, and they won't show up as being employed, as employed people in non-Dalton or other communities. So we go out and we have to work with the BLM or the state and try and understand who's their labor force, where do they live. So again, a few people that might work on the North Slope, for example, they don't show up anywhere as being affiliated with non-Dalton or Iliamna or otherwise, but clearly they're out earning cash income, bringing some of that cash income back into the community. Our challenge is to try and identify all of that information as we can.
Thanks.
Thank you. More questions?
Lori Verbrugge with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I just wanted to point out, I used to work for the State Health Department, and I just wanted to point out that the state of Alaska has recognized the problems with the health impacts that you were talking about and how hard it is to get data, and they've actually established a health impact assessment program. Their internal epidemiologists have access to the types of data that you don't have access to in the private sector. And so I just want to make everyone aware of this program and encourage the PLP to include health impact assessment in their EIS and to work with the state on that.
Yeah, your comment's very timely. I think we have a meeting sometime in November or February on that topic at PLP, so, and with DNR. So it's something we are aware of. Any other questions? Comments?
My name is Karen Ivanoff, and I have a question regarding measurement of current health, social and health impacts. I'm thinking about stress levels on residents as far as, say, mining coming into the area. I don't see how you've measured those impacts in your study.
Very good point. Very, very difficult to measure. I should have made one point that I intended to make as I went through the presentation. As we look at 2009, 2010, even 2011 data, there already is a pebble effect in there. So as we can think about the baseline environment socioeconomically, we have to recognize that starting a few years ago, there's an effect in terms of employment and income that is not sort of the traditional baseline. So we have to factor that in. Your point about stress levels, that's the whole issue around our challenge with having a better understanding of the human environment. It's just very, very difficult to get measures of those sorts of things. And it's really a very new, frankly, it's a new science around those kinds of things with respect to resource development.
You're doing interviews. What type of interviews are you doing?
Well, the interviews that we're doing are mainly with business people, community leaders, to get a sense of the cash economy. Not so much. It's a very subjective thing when you start thinking about measuring, human and social well-being. It's a very, very potentially very subjective, and any kind of research that you might do in that regard would require really very, very careful consideration about how you establish baselines. And ultimately, I mean, the reason to do that is to somehow in the future understand if resource development is having some impact on on the family, on individuals, on human health. But the real challenge that we all have now is just establishing the baseline for those things that, maybe there is data in terms of, disease or rates of substance abuse or so forth, but those other even more difficult things to measure, such as perceptions of changing well-being or quality of life, gets even more difficult. And I mean, it's a very, very good point. At the moment, the science is still pretty new on how to go about addressing those kinds of issues. We have done research elsewhere in the state that asks people about their perceived quality of life and if it's changed or not, better or worse with respect to resource development. But very, very soft science. And in these small communities closest to the project, you really struggle with getting adequate sample sizes so that you have a meaningful representation. So you try and talk with everyone and do a full-fledged, kind of a mini census in the area to ask a lot of questions, certainly within the realm of the possible from a research perspective, but we're not there yet.
Okay, more questions?
Thank you.
Okay, let's give a round of applause for Jim.